seems like tokenization of RWA, which is real world assets, is like one of the big narratives in crypto this year, which is exciting. You know, you see the world's largest banks building different use cases on the blockchain for cost and speed efficiencies. And then you see the world's largest asset managers tokenizing offerings to access global liquidity, like in a 24/7, 365 market. And, you know, Solana being so fast and so cheap, money wants to move fast and cheap. So we have kind of an organic advantage there.
Welcome to the ATX DAO podcast, the hub for exploring the forefront of blockchain technology and Austin's Web3 community. Your hosts, Nick, Mason, Luke, and Ash connect you with innovators within ATX DAO and beyond as we venture into the world of decentralized technology. So crack open a beer and join us for a front row seat to learn about the innovations and trends shaping our digital future. This is the ATX DAO podcast.
Nick is currently the head of institutional growth at Solana Foundation. He has a storied history of, you know, like a lot of wins in this space. Like you mentioned earlier, you know, pitch competition, also fellow Austinite. He went to school at Emory and then he did the right thing and came to UT Austin, got his law degree. So hell yeah. So much of Texas love. He's also the dude was a Web2 VC, which is wild, and also a Web3 VC. And now he's at Solana. Also, by the way, if you want to get on Nick's good graces, he loves Italian wine. And don't ever fucking play a man. Don't play this man in a game of tennis. I think he'll just straight up destroy you. So yeah, some good overall vibes of who Nick is.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, dude. We super appreciate you once again being here. The market's insane right now. There's so many things to talk about. But usually on the cast, we keep it conversational and chill. But, I touched upon some of the things that, you know, how you got here. But I'd like for you in your own words to describe your journey into the world of tech and making that jump from law into tech and then specifically into crypto. Those are huge leaps. Can you just tell us how you got into that?
Yeah. So, I am just so grateful for my parents. We had a great computer. We had internet connection back in the dial-up modem days, and I was just on MIRC all day long. And then after that there was AOL, and then after that, you know, kind of Netscape and internet as we know it today. But I've kind of been the kind of tech internet guy since long before it was cool or used by billions of people around the world. And then because of that, I sought out an internship at a .com in the late 90s, and then subsequently lost all my bar mitzvah money in NASDAQ, you know, in the .com, you know, buying stuff like pets.com. But the good thing was that I was a user of all of those products, like Cosmo, which was one of the early delivery apps. And it really just kind of got me hooked on this idea of entrepreneurship. And so that's what I studied in college. And then I went to law school. Studied securities law and ended up being a venture capital lawyer in 2006, working on deals like the MySpace acquisition by Fox, which was a pretty cool one. There's a great book called Stealing MySpace by Julia England that kind of details that whole saga, which was, you know, really the first Web 2.0 acquisition. And then, you know, I thought it looked so easy. So I you know, took the lead. I left my very comfortable law firm job and became an entrepreneur in 2010, started a company with Joe Kelly and Drew Bunsell from Unchained Capital. That company was called InfoChimps, and it was acquired in 2014. And that's really when I began, you know, dabbling in crypto. That's also, you know, when they were really paying deep attention to it and began building Unchained Capital. But I, you know, was still doing other, you know, what 2.0 tech stuff and edtech stuff through the rest of the 2010s. And after I sold my last company in 2021, I was I got to go all in on crypto. I've been kind of a hobbyist for, at that point, it had been, you know, 6-7 years. And so I was very fortunate that I got to join a generalist venture fund leading their crypto investments. And I did that for a year and a half before I was recruited to Solana Foundation to build out their institutional growth, which is what I'm doing now and loving it.
Wow, that is awesome. You were based by basically, you were based super young, bro. Like Pekko, that's like OG D-Gen, dude.
Yeah, I definitely was a degen long before blockchain was a twinkle in Satoshi's eye, for sure.
And I also respect the hustle of being like, yo, I have conviction. I'm going to take my bar mitzvah money and I'm going to basically YOLO into this. This is wild. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the story ended well. I'm here now, but definitely was a painful lesson in the early 2000s for sure.
Yeah, I mean, like, I know, I think me, Luke, and Mason are all like, okay, we, during the bear market, we took some huge L's, but it was kind of hilarious because we'd all lick our wounds together and be like, okay, dude, next one, we're ready. We're just like, piling off the ammo and ready to go. So, hell yeah, man.
Totally. No, listen, everyone who's still standing deserves the dunks right now for sure.
Like, it's so interesting to also hear, like, your early risk appetite for doing this. And then it's kind of interesting because like you contrasted it with your education, which is like very structured and defined, and you thought about things in a very systematic way, right? Because like typically we had this romanticism about like people who are just like, fuck it, full send, like, and there is no thought process on it. So it's awesome that you balanced that. I'm just curious, did you purposefully make that choice, or is it?
Listen, I wish I was more of a degen. I mean, I wish I had been stacking way more, like way more whiffs, right? But the reality is that I've always looked at the blockchain more from like the tech point of view and the utility. That's what brought me to, kind of invest in things like Unchained Capital and stuff like crypto very early, was because like I understand it that like we need seed phrase security, like we need on-chain data analytics. Like I am in it for the tech truly, and that's one of the things that brought me to Solana.
Your experience in law school and your experience in Wetsu and your pre-existing risk appetite informed some of your decision making in the crypto space. So when you came into the crypto space, like, what are some specific examples that you'd say, hey, based on this formative thing, this is how I approach this particular problem or this company structure or this particular investment?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think you need to like go to always start with first principles and like try things yourself. Ethereum, for example, like Ethereum like showed a lot of promise very early on, like as a protocol that allowed for dApps to be built on top of it. But until you connect walking connected wallet for the first time and like actually did a transaction, it was, theoretical, and then you move it in practice. And so my first MetaMask transaction, I think, was March of 2018. So, I had been sitting on some ETH and, and my ETH was in Coinbase because, there wasn't yet Casa or whatever, and Casa is like the unchained capital for Ethereum. And then there's Squads, which is the same thing for Solana, well, which is an awesome product, by the way. Yeah, I mean, it was like trying these things out, like seeing how they worked, and then, kind of backing up and saying like, what is like the perfect version of this look like? And that's not necessarily possible, at any given state in the technology cycle. But like today, I think the infrastructure is so much better than it was certainly in that 2018 cycle, and even in the kind of 2021 cycle. So I'm really excited about, where we are today. But why Solana was, when I was a VC, I like noticed this pattern where a lot of like the most technical founders that were in the space like were choosing Solana, and not because they were getting big grants, but because they were just like hyped up on the tech, and they said it was like so much faster, so much cheaper. And then I started playing around on Phantom, in 2021 or whatever, and like doing stuff on Solana. It's like, wow, like if you experienced how things work on ETH mainnet and then on L2s, and then you start using Solana, you're like, okay, I see the difference. I see, that different things are possible on a network that behaves like this versus a network that behaves, like that. And I'm not saying one's better or worse, but they're different for sure. And that's one of the exciting things that I think about the blockchain is, there's so many different technologies out there, and it, certainly for things that you need speed and low cost, Solana is the best. But for other stuff, maybe there's other kings that might be better.
Yeah, that's, I really appreciate that. Like, I mean, like, so Solana, you know, it's like almost like an, it's part of a lexicon of crypto now, right? Like, it's almost like spoken in the same reverence of like Bitcoin and ETH. Especially in Austin, you know, with like, you know, big name VC basically being in our backyard, with these, it's really, really cool. I was curious to see, you know, have you, the early days from Solana and the founders also being like uniquely grounded in this idea of like telecom and coming from like storied backgrounds and successes in their care in their careers, like, do you still feel like the early vision that was there in Solana is playing out every day in this new wave?
So, you know, I wasn't there for the early days of Solana, but you know, when I hear the stories around the campfire, you know, I mean, in some ways, I think it's still early. Like, nobody's too late to come into the blockchain period and crypto period, but certainly Solana. So we welcome everyone, even if they've never, you know, tried Solana. We welcome them into the community. But I think Tolly's vision, and you know, just like Vitalik and the Ethereum crew built on Satoshi's technology and vision, right? Tolly and Raj and the Solana crew built on Vitalik and Ethereum's vision, right? They said, cool, this idea is really great, but what if it was hella faster and hella cheaper, right? And that was the vision from day one, and you know, that is still the vision today, and we continue to make strides in making it even faster, right? So Jump Crypto is working on a new validator client for Solana, which will make it only the third blockchain other than Bitcoin and Ethereum to have multiple independent validator clients. And the testnet speeds are clocking in at like 1 million TPS for Firedancer. So there's going to be like another step level improvement in the. Going back to what you said, you know, Tolly obviously came from Qualcomm, and his whole kind of vision is that the software should run as fast as the hardware is capable, right? So Solana should continue to improve as a network, as the technology, as the hardware improves, right? And we, you know, if you believe in Moore's Law, that the hardware is going to get better and better and better, right? Like, just as it always has, and that will allow for the software to get better and better and better as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, so I mean, you touched upon this thing of Firedancer, right? And then how that being like a quantum leap in terms of TPS. So I was just hoping like to understand if you're basically looking for, you know, an insane amount of TPS, I guess like where, how do you see Solana's like growth and the path forward for it? You know, because like everyone is talking about like, hey, let's have all these narratives of like gaming and then DeFi and net retail. But I'm just curious because like if you're seeing 1 million TPS, like bro, that's like the world is your oyster, you know? So I'm wondering like what do you foresee happening with that?
Yeah, I mean, so Solana is very fast, cheap, and secure, right? It's about as secure as Ethereum mainnet. There's something like over nearly 3,000 independent validators, and but it's way faster and cheaper even than any L2, you know? And so that combination allows for novel use cases, like you mentioned, Ash, you know, that are only possible on Solana. And so you couple that kind of technological capability with a incredibly active and vibrant global community. Like earlier today, they had the monthly super team ecosystem call, and like it's always so fun and inspiring, but they're like groups of people from all over the world, Africa, Philippines, India, South America. You know, all these amazing people building on Solana, and they don't care about the status quo, right? They're not encumbered by like whatever exists today. They're building what they want to see in the future, right? And I think that is what Solana is all about, is kind of creating these novel use cases because the tech rails allow you to do stuff that just is insanely cool.
I mean, at this time, I gotta ask also about the DPIN stuff. I know we're just coming out of ETH Denver. A bunch of my friends were lucky enough to go to the DPIN stuff, and they were all blown away. I know, like, the first real place I've heard about this narrative about, like, you know, with like Helion, Hivemapper, all this kind of stuff, and even this, you know, the Solana phone. Like, it's like you guys are way ahead of the curve than like everyone else seeing this space. I was just curious to see, like, what is your take on that?
You know,
especially on an institutional level, like, how do these narratives, like, bind with the kind of products that you're looking for there?
Okay, yeah. Well, this is where shit gets really exciting. Okay. So, like, imagine marrying the IoT with, you know, the financialization, right? So let's just say I'm a big, you know, global shipping firm, right? I've got, you know, cargo containers full of different stuff, right? I've got IoT that can talk, you know, both amongst themselves as well as, you know, to the global state machine, right? So for example, let's just talk about like collectibles or something. I've got wine in one of those shipping containers. You know, what is the humidity? What is the temperature? Like using AI, like, and visualization, like, can they see, can they count like what's in the container, you know, give you a sense for like whatever your bill of lading is, which is like what's inside the container. When it gets to a particular port, what if there's like a loan that's collateralized by your wine that's in that shipping container, and that can get released when it hits, you know, the dock or whatever. So it's like, boom, like, you can imagine like all this programmability combining kind of like the financialization with, you know, the commerce. And, you know, that is like use case that I'm particularly excited about. And like, we're just scratching the surface.
Oh, wow. Like, yeah, I know supply chain has been like one of those really interesting things, right? Especially like you said, the IoT stuff. And if you're having the ability and you already have the wherewithal and a team that understands like, hey guys, like we need to get retail participants and like the next level enterprise participants to like basically free this data pipeline. That's super, super cool. I mean, but like along with this, I guess that leads into like regulation, right? It's like, how did you think about the regulatory environment along the Deacon narrative or even the DeFi narrative? Because it's like, you know, a million TPS means a lot of people like on there doing tons of different things.
Yeah. You know, listen, just like 10 years of people trying to get the Bitcoin ETF approved. No, for 10 years. And, you know, on January, whatever it was, like we got a yes. Right. And then, you know, 50 billion has flowed into that product now, you know, in just 1.5 months. Like, that's insane, right? So just like we've gotten no in regulatory, at least here in the US, you know, for a lot of things for, you know, 10 years, the light's going to go from red to yellow to green, and it's going to happen faster than I think people think. And then, you know, it's game on, right? And so the folks that are building for this future, you know, in anticipation, you know, kind of the regulatory green light, those are the folks that are going to be the winners, right? You know, so it's like the folks building now, like, that's where you got to be.
Yeah, I mean, like, so I guess, like, if we're not looking at hardware, let's look at, like, you know, because you're in institutional growth, right? There's a lot of trends there that are overall these big narratives, right? I had the opportunity to have a small role in, like, the Panoptic, like, DeFi DeFi RWA day. And we talked about the idea of like, how does this infrastructure work? Like, how do real world assets come onto the play? And like, I was curious to see, that must be something that you guys are tackling, especially you are in Solana. So what is the lay of the land here?
Yeah, for sure. So it seems like tokenization of RWA, which is real world assets, is like one of the big narratives in crypto this year, which is exciting. You know, you see the world's largest banks building different use cases on the blockchain for cost and speed efficiencies. And then you see the world's largest asset managers tokenizing offerings to access global liquidity, like in a 24/7, 365 market. And, you know, Solana being so fast and so cheap, money wants to move fast and cheap. So we have kind of like an organic advantage there. And then we also recently announced a new token extension capability to our native token program, which basically gives superpowers to Solana tokens, allowing them to be permissioned on the permissionless open network, you know, transfer restrictions, interest-bearing accounts, and about a dozen other, you know, various capabilities that can be, you know, kind of mixed and matched together to comply with whatever regulatory scheme, you know, you need to comply with, or otherwise kind of custom configuration for the token that you want. So for example, you may be familiar with Bomb. bonk the meme coin on Solana, which has, I don't know what the market cap is today, but I know it's like more than a lot of the layer one and layer two blockchains. They were kind of one of the first to innovate with these token extensions. There's a token, and I'm not giving, you know, this is not investment advice. There's no alpha here. You know, do your own research, but they launched a token called Burn, B-E-R-N, which is Bonk Earn. And it has a six or 7% fee, a transfer fee associated with that token that is always enforceable. So, like, you know, if you think about, like, back to NFTs, like, why did OpenSea lose? It was because, you know, royalty enforceability. But, like, in token extensions, you can build in this kind of native, these various native capabilities, and one of those is a transfer fee. And so basically every time somebody buys or sells Bonk Earn, 7% goes into the DAO. And then, you know, the DAO, you know, kind of determines how to, you know, use that money, whether it be, you know, as dividends or whatever, you know, to grow the Bonk Earn, you know, value and ecosystem. And that was just, I think, an experiment by the Bonk team, but it's just a kind of a, you know, an example use case of what's possible with these token extensions. And then we also have a highly configurable permission environment for banks and other entities that need even additional risk controls. So this tech lets anyone spin up essentially like a fully customizable fork of Solana that caters to their specific needs. And then because the token extension program is native at the base layer, like the tokens that you build in a permission environment can maintain that same permissioning, you know, when they bridge to the permissionless public network.
Oh, wow. So are you talking about like a permission sidechain that like a bank or could basically roll out, let's say, T-bills or bonds or whatever on, and then it can be ported onto the main chain and a retail customer could theoretically buy it once approved in KYC?
That's exactly right.
Holy cow. That's amazing. So like basically you're extending Solana itself as an interoperability layer natively for institutions to basically capture all these assets.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's what I'm tasked with. So, you know, my day-to-day is talking to the world's leading banks, financial institutions, asset managers, you know, to get them to build, you know, the future on a Solana blockchain, whether it's the public permissionless network or in a, you know, hosted private, you know, version of Solana that caters to their particular needs given, you know, their risk profile. And, you know, JP Morgan, you know, for example, has their Onyx chain, which is a private blockchain that they built since, you know, 2016, 2017. You know, they spent years and years and years and, you know, hundreds and hundreds of incredibly talented software developers to build that technology. Like, if you were trying to do the same thing in 2024, why wouldn't you just use a Solana permission environment? And like, in a day, you can be live, you know, like with all this capability. So it's a pretty powerful value proposition.
Yeah, I mean, that's really exciting because, like, you know, it's you have domain knowledge, right? And, like, financial institutions have domain knowledge in a specific area, and now they are like, well, how do I extend this knowledge and this asset class into the greater, wider world? That's really cool that you're looking at it as, like I guess, like, you know, chain as a service, you know? It's like a SDK that's ready to go, which is really novel. Because most people, it seems like, always have to think about the interoperability play. But you're like, hey, I'm just going to give you this whole thing and then do with it what you may.
Yep.
That's
the beauty of open source, you know, technology.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, really cool, right? Like, I think like 10 years ago, we would have never thought about things this way. But like, you know, this, like you said, a permissionless world, like anyone can build whatever they want. You just have to put the guardrails wherever you want it to be. And you can decide what that is. I guess my next question is, you know, you talked about, okay, you know what? I'm going to ask about the phone. Well, I mean, how did you get, this was like a left field, left brain kind of thing for some of us that were like not so in the ecosystem or like watching closely. How did this, and like, congratulations on all the success, by the way.
Well, I can take zero credit, but and I honestly, I don't have that much visibility to it. All I know is that Saga 1, you know, sold out and has been, you know, a big success. And I think Saga 2 pre-orders, I think, hit over 50,000 pre-order sales, which is incredible. Like, you're one of those, Mason. Awesome. I mean, 50,000 units is that's a lot of handsets. I mean, it really is, and pre-order especially. So pretty incredible. And the team working on it is amazing. You know, like you mentioned, you know, they the Solana Labs team knows how to build hardware and tech and software, and you kind of combine all those things with, like, you know, native custody and the tolling for your crypto. Pretty powerful stuff.
I mean, like, so there's so many things going on here, right? Like, it's kind of like united by this idea of, like, you know, like, you want to build hardware and software that has to run at the same speed, right? Like, going back to what you said, you have memes going crazy on Solana. You have DeepIn as a narrative going crazy on Solana, right? And it's not just a singular thing. You have the phone, you have mapping of the world, you have, you know, you have IoT everywhere. It's crazy. And now you have the institutional rolling. I was curious to see, like, you know, you might have a better idea being part of Solana right now than we are about, like, where you are today and where you want to go in the future. And I'm just curious to see, like, where do you see Solana as part of this greater fabric of the financial ecosystem and this permissionless ecosystem?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'll talk about, like, the financial markets, maybe, but, like, markets want to be 24/7, 365, and they want to be borderless, right? Bank hours and market hours, like, those are constraints on TradFi profitability. So, like, they also want to be on chain, but the regulators, like we talked about, you know, have been keeping them in a pretty small risk box. But just like we got the green light on the Bitcoin ETF, like, we're going to get the green light for banks and asset managers. And then, you know, things are going to pop off. And you're already seeing, you know, early implementations by startups, like, doing the types of stuff that these banks and asset managers want to do, like Ondo, which has tokenized treasuries on Solana. They wrap BlackRock iShares ETFs and bring them on chain. You've got Pith, which is a pricing oracle built on one of those permissioned Solana networks that I was talking about. You've got Etherfuse that is on-chain Mexican sovereign bonds. You've got Bridgesplit and Maple doing private credit and collateralized lending. Credit's doing small business loans in Latin America. Homebase, EmpireDAO, Parcel doing tokenized real estate, and many more, right? And so I think that, you know, in the future, you'll be able to use your bank and brokerage assets the same way you use crypto assets in DeFi, right? Like, your money and your assets should be earning yield all the time, 24/7. You should be able to borrow against your bank deposits, your brokerage assets, like, you know, for anything, right? And I think that that's the future we're going to see. It's going to take a little while to get there, but that's what we're building towards.
Wow. So, like, basically, there is no DeFi and CeFi. There is just finance.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. Like, if you look at the data today, like, RWA is, like, first is treasuries, second is, like, private equity, private credit, and then third is real estate with, like, a long tail. After that, if you think about, like, what these things have in common, one, they're, like, typically dollar denominated, and they're yield generated, right? And there's obviously way more depth, you know, in the market for credit funds and real estate, you know. And then I think bank deposits, brokerage assets, 24/7 trading, lower forex fees, and the ability to use them as collateral and generate yield for, you know, when that's the name of the game, I think. And so that's the future, you know, I want to see, and why I'm working on institutional at Solana.
The reason why I had to take a call at the beginning of this was because I'm trying to close a CD and I have to go through multiple people to close it. And then they're sending me a form to sign. And they were like, oh, well, if you don't do this, it's going to automatically.
What is that CD yield? Oh, you're trying to, like, close in?
Yeah, I'm trying to get it back. The yield is very low, obviously, but it's like the fact that I have to do all these things just to get my money back. And they were like, oh, by the way, if you don't do this within the next 3 days, we're going to redo it. And I'm like, no, I need this money now. So I have to call two people, sign a form. And it's just like, these are the type of incremental, like, these are the type of tiny, minute inconveniences that at, like, the massive scale of the global financial market, people don't understand the revolutionary potential of any type of blockchain when you, like, add it all up.
I mean, it's incredibly powerful. Like, Ondo, which I think is generating something like 5.2, 5.3%, You can literally go swap into that today, you know, hold it for as long or as short as you want, swap out of it and get that, you know, prorated interest. If you have a higher risk profile, you know, you can go on Etherfuse and buy those Mexican sovereign bonds at 11% interest, you know, at very short duration. You know, I think they've got like 7-day, 21-day duration. So, like, I mean, this is certainly the world we're moving towards.
Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah, I mean, it really is funny, right? How it like boils down to these little things, the little things. And we're all looking for a world where we abstract the tech away, right? And it's just like you have a seamless interplay of like what's going on. I guess like, you know, Mason highlighting this particular like pain point for him. Is that like one of the things that you guys want to do at Solana? You guys want to abstract, like the tech is all great and the narrative is all great, but we want to make it so simple. Is that like one of the big components that you feel like is going to drive your success here?
Is like ease of use? Yeah. I mean, like one of the benefits of a monolithic layer one blockchain is, you know, you have like one ecosystem, right? And everything is interoperable within that ecosystem. Like, I mean, good God, I love Ethereum. Like, I love Ethereum. I love it. But like, you know, there's a new meme coin on Zora called Enjoy. I don't know if you've seen this yet.
But I did. Like, I have my Enjoy, yes.
All right, me too. Great. We're both enjoyers. But like, yeah. I wanted to buy more. But like, I don't have enough time in the day to like swap 100 times and like, you know, move money under the Zora chain and, you know, like the buggy Uniswap implementation on there. And like, I can't. And it's like, this is a solved problem. This is a solved problem. Now I want to enjoy. I want to enjoy my my enjoy on Zora like as much as the next degen. But like, you know, there's so many benefits to a really fast, cheap, secure blockchain like Solana.
I mean,
it's very painful. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
To use all the.
I'm
go ahead.
Sorry. I just wanted to. I'm asking a question that's a little. Like, I guess, off a tangent here. You know, we talk about the inconvenience, and we live in this world where right now ChatGPT dominates the way we basically interact. But in many ways, we are basically replacing it for Google. I'm curious to see, are you seeing any NLP-style wrapper projects around DeFi primitives on Solana, where it's like, hey, it's built into your, you know, your wallet, and it's like, that's it. I just talk to it or type into it. It just takes care of it.
You know, I can't think of the names of them offhand, but like I have seen some of these and I can't remember if they're in the Solana ecosystem or other, you know, ecosystems, but like I definitely, even when I was a VC, like earlier last year, like was starting to get pitched this kind of stuff. So it's going to happen, right? I know there are also some like AI enabled block explorers, which is super cool. Like, cause block explorers are like pretty hard to like, even for somebody pretty sophisticated, they're pretty hard to like work your way through, you know? And so like being able to just like ask it a question in plain English and get an answer is a pretty powerful concept.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think Mason and I and a few other people had a chance to go to this decentralized AI day. The entire conference seemed to be buzzed around, you know, these three kinds of narratives. It was one, DeepIn, two, decentralized AI, and then three, how, you know, Bitcoin and these ETXO stuff is, you know, coming to life again. But like, you know, it is kind of crazy to see a lot of these narratives can be only applied in like specific types of archetypes, right? They only work in certain modalities. And it seems like Solana might be really right to make that happen.
I mean, listen, it's pretty clear to me that on-chain is the next phase of the internet, like going back to my .com days, but like after mobile, social, cloud, AI, like it's on-chain, right? So, buckle up.
Yeah, I mean, so like, okay, so now there's, this is amazing. So we have a future where everything is on-chain. We have million TPS being unfolded by, you know, Solana and Jump. But one of the things that we're going to, you know, like we're all degenerates. Me, I know I can definitely, you know, be called a base Lord Lizard King. No problem. But like that being said, my question is like, you know, we've had outages in the past. And I'm curious to see, you know, we're going up to million TPS. So that means there's like so much more we're going to be pumping through here. The question is like, how do you guys deal with that? And like, what happens and like what kind of contingencies are in place? Because no, like retail itself can sometimes be like, oh, panic mode. But like, you know, I'd imagine a suit is like, whoa, panic mode. So like, what do you think about that?
I mean, listen, Amazon goes down occasionally, you know, like as of today, I think we've got 3.9s uptime for the past year. And that's about as good as any enterprise SLA. And especially it's astounding when you think that Solana is a decentralized protocol with thousands of validators. You know, the downtime in February was a few hours, like in the early morning US time, obviously like prime time in Europe, but like a patch was developed, released, and accepted by the global network of validators in a matter of hours to get, you know, no block loss, no transaction loss. Like, that's pretty astounding when you think about it. And then FireDancer, having multiple validator clients, you know, provides a redundancy and adds more resilience to the network. So folks can just, you know, switch to a different validator client to keep the network humming. So this is why you don't see outages on Bitcoin or Ethereum, because there's multiple validator clients. And so Solana is going to have multiple validator clients. And, you know, I don't think it's going to make that much less likely. And it still was about a year since that last outage before this most recent one. So, I mean, I think we always can improve, but yeah, it's pretty darn good.
Yeah, I wasn't aware that FireDancer was not only about TPS, but it's also about resilience, right? Like, I definitely need to do some more homework into it. But like, yeah, I think that's super, it's a very fair and honest response about like where we are. I mean, everything is just a trade-off, and it's like you're basically building, right? We're all building the airplane while we're flying it, which is pretty exciting for all of us. I guess like my next question is like, you know, you've done it before. You're a founder, you're a VC, and now you work at a foundation at like one of the biggest blockchains in the world. You know, like you were also in the pitch competition, right? Giving as a judge. My question is like, what advice do you give, you know, like if for people that want to be like, hey, I want to come into this space and like build, either as core team, as a founder, you know, like what is your take? Like, and, you know, no filter, no cap, just like send it, bro.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say just do it, right? Like, I think the crypto community is a very welcoming one. I mean, that's one of the things that attracted me to it is, like, I just felt like my smartest, most curious friends were into it. And then, you know, when I met other people, they were equally smart and curious and interesting. And, you know, now I have this amazing network of people that I met on the internet, like because of crypto all over the world. Like, you know, my world was like fairly small when I lived in Austin, you know, 15 years ago or whatever. And like my world today is like, I'm talking to people all over the world all the time. And I think that's what crypto does, is it brings the whole world together. It just like collapses those walls, you know? And I think that's tremendously exciting. And so it doesn't matter where you are, you're US, Philippines, South America, Africa, like, you know, bit on chain, open source, permissionless, like equal, everyone's on equal footing, you know, which is the thing I love about it.
That's awesome, dude. This is like a personal question for me. What is the one thing a founder should never, ever fucking do when you're in that 0-1 phase? Never do this, kid.
I mean, don't lie or steal. I mean, like, you know, especially in this space, you know, can tend to bring out like, you know, some of the worst human qualities in some people. Right. And, you know, like whatever you do, do it with like, you know, honesty, integrity, humility. You know, if you carry those things with you, like along the way, you know, you go in.
That's awesome. Don't be a bitch and don't rug, basically. That's what I understood. Got it. I mean, in my words, but yeah.
maybe that's a good way to, you know, end on.
But like, dude, I just wanted to say thank you once again. Like, I just want to ask, if someone wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you? Like, are DMs open, email? What's the deal?
Yeah, I'm Stoic on Farcaster. I'm Nick Dukoff on Twitter. I always answer my DMs. If you hit me up, I will give you a response, even if it's a no. And I would love to hear from you all.
Dude, thank you, Nick, for coming on here. I also got a shout out for Nick for putting me on the path to, like, basically on the current path that I'm on. Like I said, you know, we were on the same schedule early in the thing, and he introduced me to a friend of his, and he basically orange-pilled me from, I guess, gray-pilled and blue-pilled from Ethan Cardano. And he was like, dude, go on this path, check it out and see what happens and take the chance, you know, like, so dude, so much love. And I really appreciate it, bro. I can't wait to see you again. Thank you once again, dude.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me on today. And I've got so much heart for Austin. Love what you guys do at ATXDAO. Thrilled to be on here and look forward to hearing from you all soon.
Hell yeah, man.